copy of the agenda was circulated. I'd like members to quickly look at it. And in terms of the agenda, let me check, do we all have the copy of the agenda? Do you have? Okay, it's being circulated, all right. Okay. I think we can start now. In terms of the agenda, we are on item number one. Shall we bow our heads and invite God to come and guide us in this meeting? Thank you. Good morning, honorable members. Good morning, the honorable minister and the rural development and land reform delegation. Good morning to the staff and all guests present here this morning. I wish to take this opportunity and welcome all of you to this very important meeting, wherein we will receive a briefing from the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform on its funding allocations as per the 2017 Appropriation Bill. In the process of dealing with the 2017 Appropriation Bill, the Money Bills Act requires the standing committees on appropriations to hold hearings on the Appropriation Bill and call in the various votes to assess their readiness for effectively and efficiently utilize their vote allocation. So through the Appropriation Bill, the Executive seeks Parliament's approval and adoption of its voted spending plans. The committee wants to see tangible progress towards attaining the medium-term strategic framework objectives of radical socio-economic transformation, and we want to ensure that all appropriate governance controls and the delivery capacity of the vote is in place to ensure the effective and efficient use of the limited public resources. The committee recognizes that achieving this vision and these targets will require improved coordination between land reform and land use, provision of communal tenure security, increased financial and technical support to farmers, and the provision of improved social and physical infrastructure, especially in our rural areas. Honorable Minister, honorable members, with these viewers, I'd like to thank you for coming, and I'm looking forward to a robust and a constructive and meaningful engagement. Thank you very much. We will then move on to item number two, which is apologies. Secretary, can you give us the apologies?
Good morning, Chairperson, guests, and honorable members. we have apologies from Mr. Sheikh Imam, who is attending the SADC meetings. Ms. Lontlangwine is attending portfolio committee meetings. Ms. Eno Konyana is off sick. And then Mr. Mainier is standing apologies. He's an alternate member. Mr. Dwabaza sent me an SMS. He's running a little bit late. And then Dr. Fick asked to leave at 10. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Honorable members, here are the apologies. Do we accept the apologies? Honorable McLaughlin is proposing, and Honorable Dr. Fick, or come again?
Yeah, I submitted an apology, so I can't accept the apology.
You can't say, okay, you're right. You're conflicted. No, that's fine. Honorable Member Manana is seconding. Thank you very much. Without any waste of time, we will now call upon the department to do a presentation on the Rural Development and Land Reform Program. And indeed, before we get deeper into the presentation, I'll invite the Honorable Minister to give us an overview of his department. Over to you, Honorable Minister.
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members and the guests. Chair, first of all, thank you very much for advising me in time, really, that there's going to be this meeting. I was very happy to join the team yesterday looking at preparations, and thank you very much for that. We presented to Parliament a budget of 10.2 billion rands, and I was listening carefully to the objectives that you were speaking on just now, Chairperson, and this is really the direction we're trying to move into. Just a few things. Firstly, I was looking at the, when we had a meeting with the select committee of the NCOP and was looking at the integrated operations plans of the department, I found a qualitatively improved presentation there. And as you were speaking, I was thinking, you know, we're still in line with what you say. Secondly, that what I observed there was a built-in monitoring and evaluation system. I'm talking internally now, Honorable Chair. The reason being that improvement yesterday when I had a meeting with the audit committee of the department, and I found that they had done a very good analysis of the way in which we work, and they've come up with very good suggestions. And when I looked at compared the report that they gave me, I found that there's synergy there. In other words, we're beginning to move away from working in silos and integrate more with the structures and institutions that are working with us. Then because we also are beginning to deal with the question of fruitless, wasteful, and irregular spending, and we thought it wise with the I hope you will welcome that. We then made a copy available for the committee here, just to attach that as Annexure A. Our view was that we need to be transparent and look, and also be able to be assisted in improving, continuing to improve the way in which we work. And so we would like the committee to have a look as well at that and say, so that we can build more and more capacity where it's necessary for us to do so. Chair, thank you very, very much. The team will make a presentation. Thank you.
Honourable Minister, we'll now, maybe we should, I'm sorry, there's one part that I have skipped, the introductions, because, for instance, I'm not sure whether the DG is here, who is supposed to lead the delegation, but then if we then introduce ourselves, I'll then know who is here. Okay, thank you very much. From our side, I take it that you already know us, am I right? Or you don't know us. Let's do the proper introduction. I am Pinky Posa. I'm the chairperson of the committee. Honorable member, Manana.
Bongile Manana, member of this committee.
Morning, minister and delegation. My name is Malcolm Fig. I'm a member of this committee.
Morning, everybody. My name is Alan McLaughlin. I'm also a member of the committee.
Thank you very
much. Morning, I'm Dama Tobas, member of the committee.
Honourable member, Tobas is also the whip of the committee. We'll then come over this side.
Good morning. Rendani Sadiki, Chief Financial Officer of the department.
Okay, thanks. CFO, am I right?
Yes. I'm Gugile Ngwindi, Minister for Rural Development and Land Reform. Thank you, Chair.
Good morning, Chair. I'm Leona Archery. I'm the Acting Director General for the Department.
Morning.
Thank you very much.
My name is Eugene Southgate. I'm the Deputy Director General, Corporate Support Service.
Thank you.
Morning, Chair and morning, members. Nompundo Ntloko Kobodo. I'm the Chief Land Claims Commissioner.
Thank you. Let's go to the back row here, and then we'll come this way.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Musa Zamisa. I'm a researcher for the committee. Thank you. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Ralph Seri Fellows, Parliamentary Services Department of Rural Development and Land Reform.
Thank you, sir.
Good morning. My name is Zola Zweni, Parliamentary Officer for Minister Rural Development.
Thank you.
Good morning, Minister. Good morning, Honourable Members. My name is Zandile Hali, Committee Secretary.
Thank you. All the day.
Good morning. My name is Mark Larson. I'm Secretary General of the Party LPP.
Thank you.
Good morning, Chair and Minister. My name is Paul Herman. I am a member of the media from News 24.
Thanks.
Good morning. My name is Pelelani Jomo, a researcher for this committee. Thank you.
Thanks.
Good morning, everyone. Nkululeko Mangweni from PMG.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Chapelo Peka, media and communication intern from the ANC caucus.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you so much, Chairperson. Good morning to the members. Good morning to the minister. Good morning to the meeting. My name is Tsepo Masiu, advisor to the committee. Thank you.
Thanks.
Good morning. My name is Darren Arons. I'm committee secretary for the committee. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you, committee members. In terms of the presentation that we have before you, as Minister has indicated, our budget is just over 10.1 billion rand for the year. I'll go straight into slide 3, which really begins to talk to the work of the entire department and all of the entities attached to the department. You will note that since we started for the past few years, we've been driving towards rural economy transformation driven by the agrarian transformation system. And within that, there are different elements that we as a department ensure we have impact on, and some of them talk to then the rapid and fundamental change in the relations of ownership systems and patterns of ownership and control. So fundamental change in the relations of land, livestock, cropping, and community. And as we've been going throughout the years, every program and policy that we bring begins to address these. So you'll see that this particular model actually begins to be something that shows you at a glance the various programs and initiatives of the department. You'll note also that as we are moving forward in this year, there are several key initiatives that we are going to be driving, talking to the Strengthening of Relative Rights program, talking to the One Household, One Hectare program, talking to the One Household, Two Dairy Cows program, and then the work that we do with rural municipalities as well. Chair, when you were starting, you spoke of infrastructure development within rural areas, and those programs begin to talk to that. This particular slide also shows you the work that we are doing in ensuring capacity at both district and local level to become really a partner in driving rural development from the ground up to the national level. So that's just at a glance this particular slide. I'm going to hand over then to the CFO, who will take you through the rest of the presentation, and then later on DDG Southgate will begin to talk to the actual targeting around the progress we've made on the MTSF as well, as requested in your letter to us. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair and members. I'll be taking you through the financial part of part of the report. Starting with slide 5, I will leave slide 4, which is the strategic goals and the programs that the department has. On slide number 5, we've got the appropriation per program for 2017-2018. We've got administration sitting with 1.7 billion. And National Geomatics Management Services at 672 million, which include SPLAM, special planning. Rural development is at 1.9 billion, and restitution 3.2 billion, land reform with 2.6 billion, totaling the 10 billion, 184 million allocation that we have received. Of that, 16.9% goes to administration and 6.6% goes to National Geomantic Management Services, 18% goes to rural development, 31.9% to restitution, and 25.8% to land reform. On this next slide, we have put it pay economy classification. We've got compensation of employees at 2.1 billion or 21.5% of the budget. Goods and services is at 1.7 billion or 16.8%. Provincial and local governments, that is just recent taxes, at 67.5 million or 7%. Departmental agencies and accounts, those are my trading entities that we do the allocations to, being the agricultural land holding account that gets about 1.4 billion of that, and this gets nothing of the allocation because they are self-sustainable, and Ingonyama Trust gets about 18 million of that amount. Foreign governments and international organs, which is the Council for Spatial Planning, we give them 1.6 million. And the non-profit institution, 3.4 million for the National Geomatics Council. Household is at 4.6 billion. I will speak to that. And machinery and equipment at just 24 million. And in total, it's 10.184 billion. We've got the breakdown of the monies that I was presenting and how we are going to use that money. On your right side where there is that nice drawings, we've got a total budget of 10.1 billion. Of that amount, transfers to entities, which I was talking about, the ALA and the DIS and the Ingonyama Trust, we give them 1.4 billion. I will speak about what we do with that money later. We've got organizational needs at 1.5 billion, which is a larger part of that is sitting on administration, and that's where we pay our accommodation, security, municipal services, and the traveling expenses and the audit. All of those are sitting on the organizational needs. 2.1 billion goes to salaries and wages, or 21% of the budget. And the household projects, and that is service delivery, which we added together with the transfers, is at 4.6 billion or 45%, and the other is just 229 million. On the left side, we're saying 5.2 billion or 51.4% of the overall budget goes to contractual commitments and our salaries and transfers to entities and organizational needs. 2.2 billion of that goes to household projects. I will still speak to them quite later. And of the 2.2 billion, it's mostly the commitments that we carried over from the 2016-17 financial year. That would be things like your tenders or the claims that have been approved but we were not able to settle. 1.3 billion household projects will be going through the normal ACM process. That is the tender, and the 65.2% of the household projects we intend to have issued the tenders before the end of October 2017. On the next slide, we've got the budget versus the department policy priorities. On your right side are the priorities that we have selected to deliver as the department. We've got the land acquisition, the strategic land acquisition that we deliver through our entity, agricultural land holding account. We've got 1.4 billion there. Then we've got land reform. That's where we do the recapitalization, where we're finalizing the commitments, and we've got the one household, one hectare one has all to do to Derek House, the Trankra projects and the CPA allocated 415 million of that. On the land claims for the restitution, we've got 2.6 billion, and rural development is 1.5 billion, and that's where we do things like your River Valley Catalytic Program, the Animal and Field Program, and social infrastructure, agri-parks, and we also do REID, the Rural Enterprise and Industrial Development, where we do agricultural industries and agricultural and non-agricultural enterprises, skills development, and job opportunities that we create there. There we have allocated 1.5 billion, including the youth organization development program, the NARISEC. Next slide, the state of readiness. What we do at the beginning of the financial year, when we finalize our E&E, then we start with the procurement plans and the demand management plans that we link to the integrated operational plans that are emanating from the annual performance plans. We then link the demand plans and the procurement plans to the project registers and allocate budget. That is to ensure that we have already properly costed our IOPs. The demand or the procurement plans are reliably determined, and appropriate sourcing strategies are developed to ensure that we already know that this would be delivered through an MOU or the service level agreement or through the tender or quotation. So we determine that before the beginning of the financial year. Then we do a breakdown of monthly anticipated expenditure so that we can properly monitor the delivery. Delivery of services is regularly monitored to ensure that scarce resources are efficiently and effectively used by regularly tracking, controlling, and reporting expenditure against performance. That we do through the IYM that we submit both to the executive and to the National Treasury. And we also have the committees within the department. We have the National Joint Strategic Committee that looks at the performance of the department, and we also have the IYM meeting that we hold with the executives on a monthly basis to account on the performance and the expenditure of the department. We continue to enforce cost-cutting measures, more especially when we look at the administration expenditure, without necessarily compromising the service delivery of the department. On the next slide, we've got the 30 days compliance that is required by the PFMA. We have tried to put the previous years. In 13-14, we were at 91%. In 14-15, we went to 92%. In 15-16, 97%. 16-17, we dropped to 94%. And that was mostly because of the budget that we exhausted, leaving us no money to finalize the payments at year-end. Reasons of non-compliance, they are similar throughout the years. We mostly have issues with the invoice discrepancies. You would remember that the PFMA requires that you include everything in terms of the law. It's not only the invoices that have discrepancies, but it's everything that you received. But out of that, you then would have invoices that have discrepancies and you cannot pay them. At a point where we issue a tender or a quotation, we would have received a valid tax clearance certificate, but then sometime it expires before you pay. And the requirement is that before I finalize the payment, the certificate must be valid. And in those cases, then we cannot pay. Other service providers do change their banking details without informing us, and that also delays the payments. These reasons are similar throughout all these years that we have presented. Next slide, what actions have we taken to comply with 30 days regulations? On the discrepancies of the invoices, we try to resolve the discrepancies with the service providers. We communicate with them. In the issue of invalid tax clearance certificate, now the National Treasury has the CSD, which we are able to access, but you still would have those instances where the tax clearance certificates are expiring before we can pay. And unfortunately, we still need to ensure that there is the compliance before we can make those payments. Changes in banking details, again, we have now the CSD, all the service providers must register their banking details with CSD. And on the export factor, invoices, contract management is sending reminders to service providers and before the expiry of the contracts to ensure that we are invoiced before. We have established an FCC committee that deals with the ex post facto where the contracts expired and we have not paid or the invoices came after the expiry. So all these things are dealt with through the FCC, which is an internal committee. On the next slide is just the appropriation of the 1.4 billion that I said I will speak to later. We've got the land acquisition at 422 million and the SRR or the strengthening of relative rights, the 50-50 policy, as it's known, we have appropriated 525 million and planning, which includes things like conveyancing and valuations. It's at 19 million. Then we've got recapitalization and development. This function is moving to DAF. However, the department has the commitments that we are still finalizing that we have allocated 221 million. One household, one hectare at 106 million. And the total is 327 million. And all those equal to 1.2 billion. We've got other expenses, things like the curator fees, where they are doing the AFU is doing investigations on behalf of the department. We have budgeted 5.8 million. We've got a project management unit that looks do things like asset verification and the assessments in the farms. Of the productivity, we have budgeted 71 million for that across the country, and the rates and taxes at 47 million, and total expenditure is 124 million, equaling the total budget of 1.4 billion that I presented and I said I will talk to later. Thank you. I will hand over to DDG Southgate to speak to the rest of the presentation. Thank you.
In terms of the emphasis, I'll go through basically the high-level targets as we execute them in relation to the MTSF and the cluster targets that are there, and I'll go straight into it. You'll see over in slide 16 the gradual progression and of the department towards achieving the targets it has set itself over the years, where we've improved from a low of 55% in 2014-15 and progressively in terms of 16-17 unaudited at this particular stage to the 94%. In terms of the productive land owned by previously disadvantaged individuals, you'll see that the target that had been set out is 2 million hectares of land by 2019. of which we've basically acquired 843,074 hectares targeted, and we've acquired 798,000 hectares. This translates to a 40% progress towards the 2 million hectares that we've acquired. In the graphic below, you'll see the years of the years for 2014-15, where we had a target of 390 and achieved 354. In 15-16, a target of 370 and achieved 242. And lastly, we had a target of 83 and achieved 201. And it gives you the grand total. What is important is that there are certain things that we are, which we would say are not anticipated. And so you'll find throughout our programs in the department there would be something like we'd have to reprioritize expenditure and go towards making money available from programs for drought relief, as happened in the year last year and the year before. And that has an impact on the targets that we have set in a program. If you go to the productive land owned by previously disadvantaged individuals, we aim to allocate 1 million hectares of the land acquired, which is 50%, to smallholder producers by 2019. And we've, over the period thus far, up until 2016-17, 38% towards the 1 million hectares have been transferred. If we go into the productive land owned by previously disadvantaged individuals, the land acquired that we've given to farm dwellers and to labor tenants, we have aimed to allocate 200,000 hectares, and for the period 2014-15 to 16-17, we've targeted 45,000 and we've allocated 22,185 hectares. That's 11% towards the 200,000 hectares. Over the MTF, a total of 28,100 hectares is planned, and so that one we flagged with a relevant component to say how you're going to make up in terms of the 200,000. Then in terms of the reduction of land transfer to previously disadvantaged individuals, which is underutilized, again, one of those things in which you have a budget allocated, and so you have to diversify your budget. And so this is the farms that we've placed under what we know as the RECAP program. The CFO has indicated the program has moved to RECAP, but what we've had to do in terms of making sure that farms remain fully utilized and productive, we've again had to divert funds or reallocate funds from land acquisition and create the RECAP program and fund it, because we didn't receive additional funding for that from Treasury. So in terms of making sure that the farms are fully productive and not underutilized, we target 985 farms over the period 2014-15, 16-17, and we've actually achieved 994 farms. That is 57 farms towards the 1,741 that we had targeted. Then the NDP states that small and medium-sized enterprises will play an important role in employment creation. And within the rural space, we know we have a very high unemployment rate. And so we take this is quite a serious indicator for us, and in conjunction with a whole lot of the other departments in the cluster and in government, a lot of our programs are geared towards generating employment in the rural space. So one of it is that we target the development of enterprises and setting up of new business enterprises in the rural spaces. And over the period targeted 592 enterprises, and we actually achieved and assisted or established 886 enterprises in the rural spaces across all 9 provinces. The details are provided in the table, in which you look at the number of new agricultural enterprises supported in 44 districts that are now aligned to one of our major programs, which is AgriParks, and then the number of new non-agricultural enterprises supported in the 44 districts as well. Then we go to the proactive land owned by previously disadvantaged individuals. In terms of them, the claim settled, the commission has targeted 1,457 total settlements for the period 2014-15, and they achieved 1,857. We've embarked on an ambitious program for 16-17, where all the claims that had been submitted would have to be researched, the old claims, not in terms of the new ones, where the Constitutional Court has ruled that we have to go through a process to legitimize it. But we, in the first quarter of this year, the Commission has indicated that all the old claims would be researched, and that would be by the end of June. But in terms of, you'll see the achievement of target every year by the Commission. In terms of claims finalized, the Commission planned for 1,066 claims over the period, and a total of 1,604 claims were actually finalized. This might be new, but the Commission might have a question in terms of claims finalized and in claims settled, and the Chief Land Claims Commissioner is here and will be able to elaborate into that distinction. In terms of the MTSF aims to have 90,000 people skilled by 2019, we target it, and this we do in collaboration with all our sister departments. The deal targeted 28,900 skills opportunities, and we achieved 32,909 over the period 2014-15 and 16-17. The NADISEC target amounts to 8,605, and for the NADISEC is one of our key programs in which we try and develop and capacitate young people from the rural areas in terms of enterprise development and skilling them for the labor market. Overall, this translates to a contribution of 37% towards the 90,000 MTSF target, and over the MTSF period, a total of 17, the remainder of the MTSF period for now up until 2019, 17,212 is planned. If we go to, again, still reducing unemployment, it aims to have 924,140 people employed through the rural development initiatives, including enterprises and industries. Again, the target is a collaborative one with a whole lot of other departments. We've targeted 21,678 jobs over the period, and we've achieved 23,739. This is a combination of both permanent and temporary jobs. It's a contribution of 2.62% towards the MTSF target from this department. Over the next MTSF, we are targeting a total of 35,687 jobs within the rural spaces. And you'll see we look at number of job opportunities created in rural development initiatives and number of jobs created in the land reform program, that distinction we've made. In corporate governance, the committee required us just to talk a little bit about that and ask this information. The MPAT, as I'm sure the committee is aware of, is an evaluation of a department's performance in terms of governance. I'll focus on slide 27, where we talk about the performance of the department. In 2012, you'll see our governance level, well, in terms of our MPAT assessment by the Department of DPME, was at 39%, something that was, I think, quite a rude awakening for the department in terms of corporate. And you'll see definite plans were put in place subsequent to that. 2013, we see improvement. 2014, we see improvement. And 2015, we see improvement. And last year, the results came out about a month ago from DPME. They've assessed us at our corporate governance level of 80%. This is because of a dedicated program that we've put in place to make sure that all the mechanisms and controls are in place in the department to improve governance. The following slides deal with strategic management, and you'll see we're fully compliant in 2016. The MPAT report we can make available to the committee should they wish, where they go into detail on all these issues. In terms of governance and accountability, we were fully compliant in level 4 and 7 of the indicators that DPME measured us on. Actually, on 6, the compliant with basics in place, we had 1, and partially compliant on 1 as well. So when we see, especially when you see levels 2 plus and level 2, right, that's where we have dedicated plans in place. And it actually becomes part of your performance assessment in that particular branch to make sure that you raise your performance when it comes to governance. Human resource management, we were fully compliant and smart in 1, fully compliant in 3, compliant with basics in place in 4, and partially compliant in 3 of the areas. And when you go to financial management, fully compliant and smart in 6 of the areas, fully compliant in 1, and partially compliant in 2 of the areas. then just general information that we think would be of interest to the committee. Our performance in terms of the targets we'd set ourselves in the last financial year, we had achieved performance of 79%. In administration, you'll see in the last column I'll focus on, is 50%. In NGMS or geospatial, within geospatial is located our deeds office. The NGMS also spatial and spatial planning, and then our geomatics component. And so for persons unfamiliar with it, when you have a TomTom thing in your cars or the garments in your car, those maps, we have an office in Mowbray that does all that and keeps it up to date for the country and industry. So they've achieved 80%. Rural development is our rural infrastructure development, 86%. Restitution, 100%. Land redistribution development, 75%. And land tenure administration, 75%, and an average of 79%. Then the committee requested information on our vacancy rate. Important distinction to make is that you calculate your vacancy rate not on your approved structure. So we might need 100 people to do the work that we are expected to do, but we are funded to fill only 80 of that 100 posts. So our vacancy rate is calculated on that 80. So the amount of money that we have to fill vacancies is just over 5,700. And our vacancy rate based on the money we have is at 3.97%. It is not based on the number of people that we have that we require to fill, because we don't have money to fill all the vacancies. And then we go into the programs and the various programs and the number of vacancies in each of the programs. You'll see in administration it is 2%, 1.5% in program 2, 2.7% in program 3, 1% in restitution, land reform is 2.4, and in the deeds office, which is self-funding, it is 10.6%. Then the committee wanted a little bit of information about internal audit and the audit committee. It is an independent function to the department's chair. We have an audit committee chaired basically by external persons and supported by the internal unit, chief directed in the department. It reports operationally to the audit committee, and administratively it reports directly to the director general. Consists of three directorates: performance audit, financial audit, and operational and compliance audit. And then it has an information technology audit section as well. And then it has a sub-directed project management and quality assurance. Independent assessments of internal audits and the audit committee effectiveness. The Institute of Internal Auditors Quality Assessment Review. Internal audits conformance to the international standards for professional practice of internal auditing was assessed by the Institute of Inter as generally conforms, which is the optimal conformance level by an external party. I went through the MPAT thing. MPAT, and you'll see in terms of governance, they scored the highest, and consistently over the last 4 years, our internal audit section, they achieved a level of 4 from DPME. In terms of the Auditor General's assessment of our internal audit function, you'll see over the last, from 15, 16, 14, 15, 13, 14, basically they are happy with our internal audit function in the department. Then just in terms of the last slide deals with, we do evaluate in terms of the programs of the department. We have a chief directed monitoring and evaluation together with external people, especially from the Department of Monitoring and Evaluation in the presidency. We evaluate and assess our key programs that we're running in the department, and we have detailed reports that have been conducted and submitted and available on our website. We can make available to the committee as well. And these are the evaluations we've done thus far: socioeconomic impact on the CRDP, the implementation evaluation of the CRDP, implementation evaluation of the recap and development program we've evaluated, the implementation evaluation of the restitution program, implementation and design evaluation of our NARISEC program, implementation evaluation of our PLUS program, which is the proactive land acquisition strategy, the design and implementation evaluation of our AVMP program, and the diagnostic evaluation of strengthening the relative rights of people working the land. That's our 50-50 policy framework, which we've done in the last financial year. Thank you, Chairperson and members.
Well, thank you so much for the informative presentation. Honorable members have been listening attentively. I would like the honorable members to reflect on their presentation and interrogate the presentation. Honorable member Manana, honorable member Dr. Peek. For now, let's take the two.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me welcome the presentation from the department. We have how many questions must we ask, Chairperson? Okay, thank you very much, Chairperson. The first question is on slide 9, state of readiness. The procurement plans that you talk about, can you just make a breakdown of this that reflects the ownership of companies in the following categories? Companies owned by women, by people with disability, youth, and companies owned by previously and currently disadvantaged individuals. With regards to the cost-cutting measures, Chairperson, if the department can inform us or give us a detailed information on the cost-cutting measures in the budget of 2016-2017 and how much savings were achieved through this and how was it spent. With regards to 17-18 financial year, what is the projected savings for this year? On slide 20, under the recapitalization, you have indicated that this project have moved to the Department of Agriculture, but there is still a portion of allocation that you still have. Can you indicate the rationale for this, why the department is still receiving it? Now, Chairperson. On slide number 22, the productive land owned by previously disadvantaged individuals, the target and the achievement. It seems as if you have overachieved on this program. Can you indicate to us whether this is whether in a form of land or financial claims? If it is financial claims, can you find out whether where did you get the money from to have such an overachievement? Thank you very much as of now, Chairperson.
Thank you. I will now call upon Honorable Member Dr. Fick.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Just as a general comment, I must say that the format of the presentation, it's simple. I think a lot of departments, in my view, can learn from this, because sometimes we get presentations which it's like they put bits and pieces together and ultimately there's no flow. And what I see with this presentation is that there's a flow. You can read and understand it, even for a man or woman in the street. And I don't know if it's because the ministers from the Eastern Cape like me that maybe that's where the quality is. But yeah. So yes, Chair, I just wanted to clarify. Okay, just regarding the presentation, I just have some issues that I would like to clarify and just some comments. On slide number 5, if I may start there, I note that there is an amount for administration which is quite high. Can we just get an explanation as to why the administration costs are so high in a department like this where, you know, it's more for land reform and development? So it's just a question with regards to that. On slide number 7, there's an issue that I would like to question and get clarification on, is that the second item, which is 2.251 billion, and you indicate that that amount, which is for this coming year, the coming financial year, but it's for household projects and commitments from the previous year. Now, are we not, by doing that, taking monies away from this year's commitment, or well, not yet commitments, sorry, projects, because of commitments that we made last year, which we probably didn't have enough funding for? So it's just a question that I would like clarification. On that same slide, somebody with a financial background, when I see other, I get a little worried. I do also understand that other could be made up of 1,000 items, but you know, when you see other 229 million rand, I'm not asking to give a detailed explanation, but it might help if maybe in the future that we could maybe get an addendum, like you've given us an addendum, you know, and then we can have a look at it. Then it's fine, because I mean, look, there's always going to be other and sundries, but maybe in this case, it might not necessarily be as a result of a number of or many expenses. On slide number 9, that's the next slide I want to, Honourable Chairperson. Okay, the comment that I had there is that the last bullet point in the presentation, you indicated continuation with the enforcement of cost-cutting measures, but then I just want to refer back to my comment that I made on slide number 7, which you talk about cost-cutting, but then you overspend. Okay, I'm not making an allegation, but you get what I'm trying to get to. On slide number 14, Honourable Chairperson, okay, this is also just a general comment, and it's not specifically that, but I made a note on that. Is do you have an updated asset register? And if so, is it possible that in the future, not obviously not today or next week, but could we just, where can we access that the asset register if you do have an asset? Because I look at the land requisition classification, and I wondered now, do you have that one of those. On slide number 17, Honourable Chairperson. Now, yeah, this is the one that my colleague asked in a different way about the over achievement versus target. Now, I want to ask it a different way or a different question. Is that, is it not perhaps that the targets hit are low or too low, so that, and I'm not making an accusation yet, so that you will always achieve? In other words, maybe that you will have an answer for this. Do you look at the actual requirement or the needs? Is a needs assessment or needs analysis done? Two more slides, Honourable Chairperson. Slide number 22. Sorry, that's the same question, same comment with regards to the target. And then the last slide, which is on slide number 33. I just have this is a comment that the department achieved only 79%, and should that target or the achievement not be 100%? So we do have a shortfall of 21%, and could we perhaps just get reasons for that? Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honourable Minister, we will then request the department to respond to the questions raised, and then we'll take a second round thereafter.
Thank you, Honourable Members. Thank you, Honourable Chair.
Maybe let me start with the last question, Honorable Dr. Thick. In terms of us saying we've achieved 79% versus the 100%, in truth, last year the department had achieved, the year before we had achieved 72%. So in terms of how we are trying to make sure we align very closely to our budget expenditure, we are moving forward. But indeed, remember that even on the ones that we have not achieved, it doesn't mean that we have not come very close to the target. In some cases, we have missed the target by two due to various things that may have happened in that project. But we don't count partial achievement. We say you've either achieved or you've not achieved. So I think that's where then the money expenditure happens, but you may not necessarily have come. So your point is taken, sir. I think the question in terms of whether or not we have an updated register, an asset register, most definitely we keep an updated asset register in terms of all of the farms that are held by the state. We are audited also by the Auditor General in terms of that, so we are able to make that available. I'm going to ask my colleagues to talk to the details in terms of the issues around the finances itself, and then I will also come back and add. CFO, do you want to start? Thank you.
Thank you. On the procurement plan breakdown, it's on, is it not? On the procurement plan, the breakdown that the member requires, we would not have it for the 1918 unless if she's asking for historic, because for the plans we still are to award tender. We did not prepare those tests. We request that perhaps we can submit them later. The details on cost-cutting measures, the House must take note that when Treasury give us the guidelines on the budget, they already implement the cost-cutting measures. So they would tell us, we want you to cut 3% from these items. So the cost-cutting measures are already implemented by the Treasury when they give us the allocation. However, we also have others that we try to implement to ensure that we still fit in within the appropriation. That can be given later. I also did not come with that because it was not part of the request on the presentation that we were requested. Recap moving to DAF. What we have, the recapitalization is run over 5 years. So when we award a recapitalization grant to a farmer, it's over 5 years. And in those 5 years, it's based on the business plans that they have presented to us. So we give them in tranches. So we've got those commitments still in our books for the farmers that we have not given full amount that we have committed. Hence, you see the commitment in our books. So we still need to finalize those. On the issue of the achievement of the restitution, the over-achievement, we try to use all the other savings that we would have from all the other branches to push the restitution. To try and, because the budget, that the allocation that we receive from National Treasury is very small for restitution, if you look at the kind of commitments that we have. So whatever savings that are there in other branches, we do not really surrender them to the National Treasury. They always would have those projects that in case we identify savings before year end, we pass it to restitution so that they can achieve more and try and finalize the settlement of those claims that they have. We really appreciate that our presentation is tops and the best. We will try to keep that up. The reasons for the administration costs being very high, What we do is for the whole country, we have centralized most of the things within the administration. So if you look at things like accommodation, all the offices across the country, whether it's restitution or land reform, whatever, it would sit with us in administration. Those are for management and effectiveness and efficient in the way we use our budget. We've centralized quite a number of things like your communication costs, the traveling expenditure, the transport facilities, recent taxes for the municipal and the water and the electricity. All those things are centralized within the administration, although it's for even the core. Hence, you see that it's a bit higher. And one other reason is we are busy with the construction of the head office. So for the construction phase, the administration costs will continue to be higher until we finish in the year 2020. Then there will be a bit of a reduction in the administration because that budget sits in administration. On the member spoke about the overspending. We don't have an authorized expenditure as a department. I think for a number of years we don't have overspending at all. We always spend what we must pay and what we have within the appropriation. And we do not set the targets low. We try to work as hard. If you look at our integrated operational plans, you will see that the targets are quite high. We try to drive the performance as much as we can. Hence, you see the overachievement. It's not because the targets were low. Thank you.
Targets. Our targets are aligned to budget allocation and based on past performance used as a baseline. So if we had acquired X number of hectares last year, we look at budget allocation and past performance and see how we could fit in, given that the values of properties varies across the country. So each province then comes in with a proposal and it's based on that. It's not, it isn't thumbstuck and it's never too low. We'd rather go for setting maybe a bit higher, but we carefully monitor that in the department. And just in terms of the slide 33, where we spoke about the 79% achieving, the acting DG spoke about not achieved, you'll see there's a column, the third last column says partially achieved. And if you add a band in the column next to that says partially not achieved. So we did not work on any of it, was not no achievement in any of the targets.
Chair, maybe just the one question also to respond in terms of slide 7 where you asked about the impact of the projects that we had said are carrying over. Remember that the department also works on multi-year projects, so it is not, we plan it that way and we know. So it's just showing you that those projects are already procured, they are running, a lot of delivery then to happen first, second, third quarter. And it's the same then that as soon as we raise an approval, we know that we are moving towards the payment in the new year. And that's the way that we have planned for it. So it's not eating into the money of this financial year. Just maybe, I'm not sure, CLCC, if you just want to talk to the issue of restoration or financial claims, slide 22, that it does include both.
Thank you very much, Chair. Now, just to say that, yes, I can also confirm that in terms of our overperformance, what we usually do is that we usually have more work than the budget that's allocated. So we have projects that are always in the pipeline that we then can use to pay, taking money from the CFO when it's available. Over and above. And also, I think what we are doing is acknowledging the pressure that is there that says that we need to fast track the settlement of claims. So that is why you will see that consistently over the past 3 years the numbers have gone up. So it's an intention to try and do as much as possible with the little resources that we have. Yes.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Minister, allow me initially to congratulate you. From what's presented to us, it seems that your department's one of the best performing departments that's presented to us. And I'm sure that that also is reflected by the fact that you're sitting here. So, welcome. It's good to see a minister come and present to us. We appreciate that. If I can just go through, I share my colleague's sentiments about the clear way the presentation has been set out. I did have a few little questions in my mind that I would appreciate some answer to. On slide 6, if you could perhaps just give us some kind of breakdown. Your biggest single expenditure item is households. It just says households. Now, if one looks at slide 7, you'll see that that same word appears in three out of the four elements that you've broken it up into. So obviously households covers quite a range of things, and perhaps you could just unpack it a little bit for us. As I see, we speak of household projects, commitments, and some of these are now rolled over into future years. Perhaps it covers that, what you were saying, where it's a recapitalization project, and it goes over a number of years. But then there's also household projects that go through normal SCM processes. Why would there be those that don't? Maybe you could just give me an understanding of that. And then there's another 65.2% of household projects to go through normal SCM process are projected to be awarded by, so you're just telling us something that's going to happen. I just wasn't quite sure why. It seems a little confused to me. Forgive me, because we're talking about amounts of money and percentages all on the one slide there, and we're referring to households right through. And then just while I'm on the subject of recapitalization, I wanted to understand, you speak you do it over a five-year period. So for any one given project, do you budget the full 5 years amount in the year it's allocated, or do you split it up, and does that form part of a future budget over 5 years? So is the money all there in the first year when you do your budget allocation, or do you split it up and just have 20% of that cost in the first year, 20% in the second year, and so on? It would just help me to understand how you actually go about that exercise. And then I'd also like to know, you indicate on here you also do transfers to entities, 1.496 billion. Would I be correct in understanding that part of that would also be administration expenses that are separate to your own administration expenses, because the entities that receive the money also have administration costs, so it's going to, in fact, push up your total administration costs a bit more. Would I be correct in that assumption, or is there some other understanding that I could have of that? And then if I could ask you, I'm just selecting a few of the things I did have a look at. On slide 12, the last bullet point, you say consequence management is applied after investigation by FCC. Can you give us a little information on what consequence management you actually apply? How does it operate? Who does it? And what are the effects? What are the sanctions you use on people who you find guilty? Because I noticed in the other presentation, NHA, you tell us about quite a lot of the fruitless and wasteful expenditure items that are condoned, but you don't tell us about the ones that aren't condoned. Maybe you could just, in that same picture, explain to us what happens to those ones. If I could go to, I think it's slide 34, I'll just ask a question on that one and then I'll leave it there. deeds registries. And those deeds registries have the highest number of vacant posts, 138 of them, and that equates to 10.62%. Are these vacant posts posts that are also funded, or are they frozen posts? Just help me to understand. And then you say a number of posts additional to the establishment. Can you just explain what you actually mean by that? You've got a headcount of 1,171, number of funded posts 1,300. I imagine that difference probably comes out somewhere in this. I don't fully understand why we have a difference in the headcount and the number of posts filled, for example. It's not a big discrepancy, but there is a slight difference. I just wondered, is that the different nine additional to the establishment? What does that actually mean? Are there people in those posts? Are those the ones that you're actively trying to find people for? Just, if you could just explain the way you've broken that down for me a little bit more. I hope I'm not being too obtuse, but it just seemed to me that that's how it was. And then, where in your budget you say that the deeds offices are self-funding, and I understand that to an extent because you charge registration fees and so on. For the properties you allocated people, who does those transfers and where's that payment coming out of? Are you using the services of a state conveyancer? Are you using private conveyancers? And that cost, where's that carried in your budget, if you would indicate that to me? Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable McLaughlin. Honourable Member Shoppes Tole.
Thank you, Chairperson, for the opportunity, and just want to apologise. I'm not well today. Honourable Minister, I had too many questions for you, very difficult ones. But you know, since that you have got an uncle in the furniture shop, Dr. Fig, I'll wait until he's gone from this committee. Then I'll deal with my question. But I just want to appreciate, you know, the simplicity of your slides. It's easy to follow. And, you know, in the spirit of cooperative business governance, is it possible for you to sit down with the other departments and sort of just walk them on how to share with them as your sister departments how to simplify? Because, you know, a person like me, I'm a rural woman. If you complicate things, it's very difficult for me to follow. But thank you very much. I've got a lot of questions which I will actually send later in writing. But one of the things that I would like to understand as a rural woman is how many farmer support units do you have and where are they? If you can sort of simplify it for me per ward. For now, that will be my question, but I also have a remark, Minister. I hear, you know, nowadays there is this narrative, cost containment. I understand, you know, because the economy is sad. But I don't, and I hope with all my heart, that you are not moving it to austerity, because that is scary. You see, in any economy, if the economy is not working, if private sector is not investing, government must. We are a developmental state, and in a developmental state, government must intervene. And this is the time, because the economy is not growing. If you over over apply this to the extent of austerity, this country will go down. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. The recapitalization program. I think I had the response to the question earlier on to be saying you are still the actual work is still located within your department, just so that you deal with the actual budget that you still have within you. I wanted to then I wanted further clarity as to the function itself. Does that mean you only moved the function to DAF from 2017-18 whilst you are still completing what was in your plan and what was in your budget? So it's not quite clear, because the other side of the question would have been, if you moved that function to DAF, did you move the budget with it, or you kept the budget? So if you could further clarify that. On slide 22, the land claims, it would help us if you clarified whether these are actual land, the actual land transferred to people, or it's the financial value claims, or both, and indicate to us the actual value thereof. The jobs target throughout the MTSF period of 924,140. We're just a little more than halfway through the MTSF period, and you have only achieved over 23,000. Is there a plan to upscale that so that you achieve that target by 2019, or at least get closer to that target, as close as possible to that target? What are your plans there? And just broadly, question, Chairperson, to what extent is your 2017-18 budget going forward refocusing on radical socio-economic transformation? Because we need to make that shift now that is the real target So if you could further explain that. I see that in slide 9, you do talk about that, and of course I think one member asked the question about your breakdown relating to women-owned, disability-owned, youth, etc., and so on and so on. Which would be a nice breakdown, but we do need this shift, and we are asking this question to all the departments we are seeing, because it is the state that must make that shift in its budget so that we begin the process of achieving radical socio-transformation. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you so much, Honourable Member. If I may add, with your permission, I also want to once more congratulate the department for the insightful presentation. But then as SCOA, we would also like you to submit a clear plan, or let me say that is developed in terms of the SMART principle. It must be broken into programs and the budget allocated to those programs and the economic classification. We would want to see how the department intends to implement the 2017 budget in terms of those programs. And we would also like to use that as an instrument to measure performance, specific and SMART principles. All right. The next question from me is, on your MPET assessment, again, I'd like to congratulate the department for being one of the departments doing well in the MPET assessment. However, we are noting with concern few areas of non-compliance pointed out in your 2016 report, MPET report. For instance, on the SDIP, there's non-compliance there. And also on your cooperative governance, particularly on the ICT, there's non-compliance. On your PAJA, and here there's the non-compliance from 2015 and also 2016, so there's no improvement. Again, I see on your management diversity for 2016, there's non-compliance. Now, observations are that there is only few areas where you need to improve. And as far as I'm concerned, you're just few steps away from achieving your yellow and green there, which is good. So indeed, it is very important. Maybe if you could share with us on your turnaround plan in these areas that I've just spoken to. And then, see, the committee wants to see the impact on the ground. You will remember where it comes from. Shift from output-based to outcome-based. So as we follow the money, our greatest interest is in the impact. And we want to acknowledge that resources are limited. But however, we know that the DPME has indicated to us that only 8 million or 9.8% hectares of arable land have been transferred against a target of redistributing 24 million hectares. But also, there are over 7,000 land claims outstanding since 1998. Also, we have seen a 19.1% decline in households involved in agriculture, from 2.9 million in 2011 to 2.3 million households in 2016. Acting DG, would like you to comment on this and indicate what can be done to reverse these major challenges. It's about a turnaround. Okay, then again, the rural development and land reform sector is multifaceted and contains intersecting mandates across several departments, including the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries, and the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform.
how far are you in ensuring that there is alignment to avoid these overlaps and duplication so that we have better outcomes? These overlaps and duplication so that we have better outcomes. The next question is, as this committee, we are concerned with value for money. That's our core business. We follow money, we look at value for money. And in terms of your readiness, we know from monitoring and evaluation reports from the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation that one of the challenges you face is that is paying a premium for land and ensuring that there is clean financial management on the restitution program. Could you outline steps to address these concerns? Because what happens where a gap is identified, you would then expect a turnaround plan. The last question is, agri-parks are possibly one innovative way to revitalize rural economies. Agri-parks. How can you scale up this program and let more of this information be publicly available and accessible for rural women, the youth, for rural women and the youth to participate? We will then hand over to the department for responses.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, members. If I start maybe again, if members allow me, I'll start from the bottom. Going up. In terms of the Agri-Parks program, indeed we also see it as a catalyst for rural development, and we are also now moving towards ensuring that we align the work that we do in the Agri-Parks also to work that we will do in terms of turning South Africa into a construction site by driving, using this as a catalyst to drive other departments' work as well within this particular spaces. We are intending, remember we are working in the 44 districts of the country, and what I'm going to be making available, Chairperson, to you is then a video which you all can also look at later, which shows the progress that is now happening in every of the agri-parks that we have. It has a snapshot of progress, and we'll be updating that on a quarterly basis. So you then can also use that whenever you require, and it'll show you then how we are also targeting young people and women in terms of the spaces that we are working in. One of the things we're going to be doing in the quarter that is coming is a massive mobilization drive aligned to the farmer production support units. One of the members had asked how many farmer production support units do we have. The farmer production support units that we are working on are the ones that are aligned to the Agri-Parks program and aligned to the Agri-Hubs. And what we are doing now is working on at least two FPSUs becoming functional in each of the districts, and we'll provide that list as well with that report that I will submit to yourself, Chair. In terms of the issues on the value for money issue raised by DPME, and the challenges that I indicated with us paying a premium for land. Remember, Chair, we have introduced the Office of the Valuer General, and since the introduction of the Office of the Valuer General, we are seeing that we are indeed saving, and obviously the work of the Valuer General, we are fully capacitating that office to be able to perform this function in terms of assisting us to ensure that we actually move forward in this area of the land prices that we pay. In terms of the intersecting mandates and the alignment with other departments, Chair, we also are responsible, as you note, for Outcome 7. So we have used the Outcome 7 platform to institutionalize the coordination with other departments,
and aligning also the work that we do. We work very closely with the Department of Agriculture. We have several bilaterals, and we are also now, even as the recapitalization program has moved to the Department of Agriculture, working with them to ensure that when we provide support on these farms, it is not duplicate support that is being provided by agriculture and the department. At the same time, remember when I responded earlier, I said we have created a mechanism between national, district, and local municipalities to ensure that we have a very streamlined governance system that allows for that integration to happen across, because indeed the transversal nature of rural development means that we are dealing with over 20-odd departments in terms of the work that we have to do, and we have to ensure that our work really is the catalyst for departments to lead in terms of their core mandate. We also have been driving MOUs with several departments, and we are soon also going to be signing an MOU with the Department of Human Settlements as well in terms of partnership. So our job is not necessarily to be building houses, etc., but to ensure that the right departments do come in. And we do the same kind of work then at provincial government level. So we have been strengthening that. We also, one of the departments in terms of Outcome 7, and DPME will report the same, that have been conducting over the last quarter service delivery workshops across the country to ensure that we understand fully well what are the challenges under Outcome 7 and what is the requirements then of the sector departments that we are working with, so that we build our support around that. In terms of the issue, Chair, you raise around the transfer of only 8 million hectares and the land claims. Again, remember that the target that was set is of the 24 million, if we are measuring us against 8 million right now where we sit. That is a quite a huge target, which requires also a significant budget allocation. So right now, even as we are working towards these hectares, the CLCC was indicating that we are settling the maximum amount of claims in a year at the moment against the budget that has been given to the department. So that is indeed one of the challenges. We have constant engagement with National Treasury, understanding fully well, though, the current fiscus and the challenges that we face. And we do come with creative ways of trying to find how we can maximize the delivery within the budget that we have been allocated. And one of those programs that we come with is the Strengthening of Relative Rights Program, where it is really partnership with current commercial farming enterprises and ensuring then also that we deal with the tenure security, we deal with the access, we deal with bringing black farmers into the commercial sector. But again, if you do it in a partnership, you are able to do it with lesser money because of the way in which the partnership is structured. It will bring more hectares, however, into the system. Also, in terms of the 19.1% decline in households involved in agriculture, remember the part of agricultural support is directly the responsibility of Department of Agriculture. But at the same time, because we know that our function and mandate relates to rural development, and agriculture is a core part of rural development. Some of the programs that when I started, I referred to the One Household, One Hectare program, as well as the One Household, Two Dairy Cows program, and all of the other programs we do in the rural space is what we are trying now to drive this initiative of getting more households involved in agriculture and increase the levels of food security at household level as well. But again, we work closely with the Department of Social Development and the Department of Agriculture in that regard. In terms of impact, Chair, most definitely we agree. We also measure ourselves in terms of impact, and we'll be able to also provide you again the progress against Outcome 7 and what impact we have made broadly in terms of the number of households, etc., the number of young people, the number of people with disabilities. We do have those statistics in terms of land access as well as in terms of the rural development programs, so we will be able to provide that. Chair, in terms of the areas you raise for us not being compliant yet in some of the impact areas, we have taken note of that also as a management team. And as DDG Southgate had presented, we have action plans in place that are trying to move us
in those particular areas as well as we move forward. So we will, like you had indicated, be able to provide you then with the action plans that we've put in place to try and move out of the red and even the yellow, the 2+ in terms of those areas. In terms of the first comment that you say, we provide you detail in terms of allocation per program. We will do that, including then the economic classification, so that you can use that. I think, Chair, as Minister has started, he has said we had also submitted to the Select Committee an integrated operational plan that details the work with the allocations per province. So we will also submit that for you, so it will help you also then, I believe, in the oversight also that you would do of the department. In terms of radical socio-economic transformation, and what extent does our budget talk to that? You remember I started with that wheel. We refer to it as the magic wheel in the department. It is a wheel really that begins to talk to all the elements that we believe are critical in terms of radical socio-economic transformation. And that is the work that we are really institutionalizing. So our budget under rural development and land reform, we believe, is really targeting the issues of radical socio-economic transformation. You will look at, again, the programs that I referred to, the strengthening of relative rights program, the one household, one hectare program, the one household, two dairy cows, but also the revitalization of rural towns and villages, and then the work that we do with young people, who we believe then are the core that we are capacitating to be able to drive this radical transformation within the rural spaces. So, and then obviously the land sector in terms of the access. So that wheel begins to talk also to the institutions that we are changing. Remember the introduction of the Valuer General, but again the capacitation that we are putting at district level around our land rights management boards, etc., all of them are listed there, and we believe then those are where our budget is going to drive the issues of radical socio-economic transformation. Because within that, we have to change the systems, we have to change the patterns of ownership, and we have to change the institutions in terms of going forward. So that is where our budget is actually going. The jobs target, Madam Chair and members, is the 924,000 is a collaborative target with other sector departments in terms of the MTSF. It is not belonging only to our department. In terms of our contribution that we had so far made, we are slightly above target, but indeed it is not the big target that we would want to see. But what I will do is provide you the information in terms of the actual place at which we sit for the whole outcome 7 for which this 924,000 talks to. So I will submit also then that particular report, Madam Chair, that will show you where we are in terms of the full targeting. And then in terms of the recapitalization program, Honourable Member, let me just say the recap program, when it started in our department, was not given an allocation by National Treasury. We had to find a way, given the challenges that were happening in terms of land reform farms, to find a way to support the farms themselves and make them farmable. So we had to set aside money from within our own budget allocation. And a percentage of money then from our land allocation money was utilized to do the recapitalization program. So in our discussions, when the decision was taken to move the recap program itself to agriculture, we have had discussions with both Treasury and the Department of Agriculture to indicate that there was never a separate allocation for recap. And hence, the money that we were using for recapitalization would then move back into our land allocation budget so that we can go back to the targeting that we had originally set for land access in the country. So that is that, and I know that we are constantly indicating this so that people then have an understanding that we never had that budget within our department as well. So there was nothing for us to transfer over. And agriculture has understood that, and what agriculture now is doing, they may not take it over as calling it the recapitalization and development program, but they are going to call it within their support programs for farmers within their own department, where they then are setting aside the budgets to support even the land reform farmers as well. In terms of the cost containment, Honourable Member, I think that is indeed a very valid point, that if we move
towards austerity, then we run the risk of not functioning properly as a developmental state, and we do take note of that as well. I think I've answered the question on the farmer support units, ma'am. I will provide then the full detail of where they are across the country, and we'll be able to deal with that. In terms of the deeds issue, they are indeed self-funding, and in terms of our department, in terms of land that we transact on, the conveyancing amounts are covered under the relevant branch of land redistribution or the restitution program. And we have a particular amount set aside for planning, so that is where, yes, that is where that amount is coming from. I'll ask DDG Southgate to touch just now on the issue of the vacant posts within within deeds as well, and then the CFO to talk to the consequences after the FCC has sat and how we deal with that. I think in terms of the recap budget, when we approved in the past, remember now we're not moving forward, the amount that you see currently in our budget under recapitalization and development is really for us, because of that five-year process, we had tranches that were already in motion, and we've agreed with agriculture that we will use our current money to close out those current tranches that we are busy with, so that we do not allow the farmers to be prejudiced in any way. But it is only on projects that were already approved where the last tranche had to now be paid. So each year, we don't put all the money in one year, although we approve as such, we project for those years that the money would have been used. So the funding you see now is really to close out our work, yes, currently within the department. CFO will also cover the issue of the transfers to entities. In terms of the household budget line item, I think CFO will also deal with that as well, honourable members. DDG Southgate?
Just in terms, Chairperson members, in terms of the additional person funded vacancies on our staff establishment, you'll see the majority of them, if you go to slide 34, are within the NGMS program. Those are bursary holders who have to be appointed additional to the staff establishment to complete their qualification in terms of the GIS qualification and in terms of the special bursary program that we have, so that we basically develop capacity within the Surveyor General field. And so those persons, they go through 3 years at an academic institution, then we bring them into the department for a period of 2 years, and they're appointed additional so that they can get work experience and complete the qualification. You'll see in terms of the others, there are smaller numbers of persons additional. Those are persons who are appointed over and above the approved staff establishment into posts where we have specialist skills that we bring in into the department, and that's how we accommodate those persons.
On the breakdown of the households, it's all the code that we do. We've got agri-packs. They are included in the households. This year we'll be doing the farmer support, for farmer production support units, and the agri-hubs under agri-pack. We'll also be doing in rural infrastructure development, the animal and field management program, the revitalization of rural towns, the socio-economic infrastructure that includes things like your bridges, your parks, and anything like houses if they are there. And we will also be doing skills development and the one integrated community center program in there. That is the households under rural development. You also have household in restitutions where we do the acquisition of land for restitution purposes and financial compensation. Under land reform, then these are the breakdown of the households that you see. Under land reform, we would then be doing
certain things like your land tenure and the recapitalization in the one household, 1 hectare, in the acquisition of land for labor tenants and farm dwellers. And on again on rural development, we have the rural enterprises that we run under household. So that household is basically a line where we do service delivery on. It's broken into quite number of programs that we run under every branch. We can also provide a list of those because they are costed. That 4.6 billion that is sitting there is costed per delivery, per district, what we'll be doing in every district. Then you also ask on whether the transfer include administration. We've got 2 entities that we do transfers to. One is ALA trading account, where we do strategic land acquisition, a program. That entity reports to the CFO, so the administration is already included under our total administration. What you see there is money just to deliver services under that entity. Then we've got Ingonyama Trust, which we transfer about 18 million. That 18 million, they use it mainly for salaries and any other. So if we're talking about the money that is over and above the administration, would be the 18 million that we transfer to the Ingonyama Trust. But otherwise, the rest of the 1.4 billion is mainly allocated and to be expended on service delivery issues. In terms of the FCC, what happened to the cases that are not condoned? Once it's not condoned and an employee is found guilty, they must repay that money. So we then raise the data and we follow up to ensure that there is repayment. Who constitute this FCC? We've got the legal, they are part of the FCC. We've got finance and we've got labor relations. So when we deal with every case, there's different expertise that constitute this committee to ensure that we are still within the parameters of we are legally within the parameters in dealing with these cases. You ask about the how many FPSU are there and where are they. We do have a list of all of them. They are costed. We can send that information through. I was just looking at the quick things that I have done. We have about 72 projects across the country for the FPSU. We will give you the list of those. I think those are all that relates to the CFO. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Chair. I just wanted to perhaps just give a view in terms of the number of claims that were lodged. We had about 79,000 claims that were lodged. That relates to the claims that were lodged before the cut-off date of 1998. We have already 3.3 million hectares that were acquired as a result of that. We affected or gave 1,014 to people with disabilities, 328,000 were females with were households that are led by females, but a total of 2 million plus beneficiaries,
And if we break that down into households, it's 408,000 beneficiaries. And the overall cost total of about 30 billion, which is 11 billion on financial compensation and 20 on land acquisition. Last year, the report that was given earlier, Chair, relates to both financial compensation and land acquisition. Hectares awarded in the last year is 107,000 hectares awarded, and the land cost is 1,082,000,000, and financial compensation is 1,862,000,000. I must just be quick to add that even though very often the view is that a majority of our beneficiaries take financial compensation, it is not one is to one if you do the calculation, because a lot of the time the financial compensation is cheaper, and in the context of its urban registered rights, we're talking about maybe District 6, Alex, so it's less than a hectare that we're talking to financial compensation, whereas if you talk about land, it's vast tracts of land that we actually transfer to to individuals, families, or communities. Also, there was a question around the fact that there's still about 7,000 land claims that are outstanding. Yes, as part of our strategy, we are working to try and fast-track the settlement of claims that are outstanding. There was a Operation Pakisa that was launched last year, and one of the outcomes there was that the Commission has a responsibility to ensure that we fast-track the settlement of claims. And as a sub-item to that, we are wanting to ensure that all of the research that is of the claims that are outstanding that were lodged in 1998, that we've finalized the research of those before the final the year end. So we are creating, in terms of the cabinet's decision, to try and make sure that the commission is more efficient and more effective, and moving towards an autonomous commission that is able to really fast-track the settlement of claims. So that's our plan to try and resolve those. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. The cost containment, the Honourable Shope was correct. We are afraid of this. And if we actually applied or implemented this cost containment tactic, we might inadvertently end up with that austerity. Even worse, we could end up not having the internal capacity to deliver on our programs. That's the biggest threat. I'm happy the matter has been raised. Very happy with that. So that we are checked on that. On the question of impact on the ground, I think that there's a booklet that's been distributed here. But I read a report by HSRC, a research report by HSRC, which they sent out last year, or published rather last year. It says 65% of land is productive, land that has been redistributed, and 33% is the opposite. They were using three provinces as sample, KwaZulu-Natal, Free State, and I think Western Cape. So that was encouraging, because that exactly was the idea behind us taking 25% from the baseline budget and do the recapitalization of farms. And we had to start actually from 1995. And that program we established towards the end of 2009 when we started the department. So that has been a big challenge for DAF as well. And we're trying to assist, but we're getting a lot of I don't want to call it representation, but farmers are saying we should not hand over this problem to DAF. Because I agree with them, but the decision has been taken. I agree with them because this is a structural challenge with DAF, which is not of DAF's making. It's a systemic thing. Once money goes to the provinces, DAF has no control, as you know, Speaker. DAF loses control on that, and then provinces do as they like with the money. Now, it depends on the extent to which Treasury itself would be strict in terms of ensuring that equitable share goes to where it was meant to. From our side, we're still lucky we can make the decisions and follow up. So that 65% was the result of that intervention on our part, although we don't have a mandate directly to do so. Now, the transversal nature of our department, one of the things I just wanted to say is that we have just gone through Operation Pakisa for agriculture, rural development, and land reform. And now there's what they refer to as a mini Pakisa for land reform. And that's going to be a follow-up. So there are programs now that are designed to achieve what you were asking, Chair, in terms of ensuring that all of us, those who are involved in the space, they are going to work together to pursue that outcome of the mini Pakisa, as they call it. The last one, Chair, is on the agri-parks, my team didn't say anything about municipalities and district and local municipalities. With regards to the agri-parks, we have met with the district mayors and entered into an agreement that they will be, all of them across the country, they will be political champions of the agri-parks. So that we want to make sure that, because what we're not emphasizing, perhaps all of us, is that the economies are actually local economies. And if we don't emphasize this, and it's not going to work, that we try, whatever we try in Pretoria, it's not going to work. So we said, fine, this agri-parks program, there should be a direct relationship with the district municipalities so that their IDPs also are linked to the agri-parks. But we're also exercising, or we're actually meeting our constitutional requirement that provinces and national departments must empower the municipalities. Remember that the constitution enjoins us to do this thing. So we thought, let's actually use this as an opportunity. And actually, district municipalities are very, very happy about this. A lot of work has started as a result of that. All of us are working together to achieve this. With regards to the local municipalities as well, we met with the mayors of and MMs of local municipalities on the one household, one hectare, one household to Derrick House and land rights management, because this thing of even these things about evictions and so on, those things, if we had these land rights management committees, you will see in the ESTA amendment, this is there now. This is meant to empower local municipalities to set up these committees, land rights management committees, so that if the farmers want to evict people, they don't evict people without having gone through that. so that if there's a need at all, absolute need, people should be, because we don't discount that it might be necessary even. But they must not be put on the street. They must make sure that the municipality has got the accommodation for people. Or all of us, we should be able to intervene there. I might just say, Chair, which has not been said, that where we intervene in these circumstances, we actually build houses with 100% solar. We don't use the grid because these people are poor. So that's how we do it. We, with the labor tenants, we intend moving that direction even as well as. We're just moving into the labor tenant space. We just created a chief directorate focusing on labor tenants now, because this is an area you can see in the report. It shows that there are low figures there with regards to achievement in terms of land labor tenants getting land for them. So the local municipalities, therefore, they were on the ground. We have agreed with them that they will champion this one household, 1 hectare program of ours. One household to Derrick House, the land rights management committees, and that one village, one rural village, one integrated community development center. Because our people don't have these facilities, which we take for granted everywhere. The rural women and youth, Chair, you were raising this, which is the last one here. We have budgeted now. Because we have a very strong women, rural women in arts and craft and designs, they are running across the country, including here in the Western Cape. And now, the women have already collected 100,000 rands to start this bank. Now we budgeted for the 1 million rands for the women now. So this year, we're hoping that not later than August, we'll launch that bank for women. They've already, as I say, they've paid already the initial 100,000 rands, and they've organized themselves into a cooperative assisted by the CIDB?
CBDM.
CBDM, and so on. So they are already there. The youth also, it's the same thing that we're doing with them as well. We budgeted for that. In the budget speech, we did make this this point that we will allocate this 1 million rand, which is the minimum, to create the bank. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable members, and last round on follow-up questions and no questions. After that, we will then see the department to respond and then close engagement. Thank you very much, Honourable Member Schopenstaller. Any other follow-up? One of the members, Tobago, and then I'll also aid after Honourable Member. Honourable Member, Schopenstaller?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I kept this one for the very last Honourable Minister, because it's a question that is burning, and I would like you to make yourself personally to that situation. It's a question when Bushbuck Ridge was transferred from Limpopo to Mpumalanga. 99% of the labor in Hoedspruit come from Bushbuck Ridge. And it's, you know, in Hoedspruit, it's farms, lodges, game lodges, and a lot of people are there. Their condition is dire. They have not seen the new South Africa that we are talking about. They don't have accommodation, some of them. The situation is so bad that because they don't have a fixed place to stay. We have tried it. I mean, in that village of the town of Hoedspruit, we have tried to sit down and talk to the municipality. I think for 4 years, we promised that money has been set aside to purchase land so that houses can be built. They ended up putting checks
near the railway. It was, I understand the land went to Public Works. But one day, somebody decided to demolish everything, and it was raining. And I just came home. Unfortunately, my house is at on the road, and because they come from Bushbuck Ridge, they all know me. They all came to my house and said, we want to sleep here. And my two garages were filled with people. And even after that, you know, Woodspread is a tourist place. It's all the shops there, food. They eat wimpy. They eat until 11 o'clock. And these girls knock us at 11 o'clock to go and hike. So at times you find 10 girls knocking, Mama, we will be raped. So every time I have to open my dining room, I have to open my garage for these people to sleep because I can't have them raped if I know. So I want you to intervene because the municipal mayor was not very helpful. Fortunately, he did not come back. But I think you should help the new one so that these people must have accommodation. There are a lot of them now, they are sleeping under the bridge. And during the Christmas holidays, I was awakened at about 1 o'clock at night. I had to run like a cameraman, taking photos of burning shacks. I've done that. In the middle of the night. So, you know, I don't know. As if there is just no help. And I think the municipality, because it's a very small municipality, they need the support of your department. I don't think it's a question of them not willing to do it, but I think they don't even know how to solve it. And it's very urgent. In 2007, I was chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Social Development. I asked the legislature to make a scientific study on the situation of farm workers in the Woodspread area. They've got a book. I'll make it available to you. Last year they told me that they've reviewed the research and they've got an updated one. So if we can sort of look at those and try to assist these people, it's very painful the way what they're going through.
Thank you, Chairperson. I want to direct this question to the Minister. The President has consistently spoken about the importance of the participation of traditional leaders in facilitating land acquisition and more importantly, productive land use. To what extent, Honourable Minister, or just how strong is the cooperation between your department and the traditional leaders in pursuing this important part of your work? Because it not only speaks to undoing the dispossession, it speaks to the question of using land as an economic asset and driving issues, for instance, of food security, especially in rural areas. And that kind of cooperation becomes very important.
Okay, and then from my side, now, in terms of the rural development infrastructure, allocation for the MTF period, meaning 2017-18 to 2019-20. You have been allocated a budget to the tune of 2 billion. Now, as this committee, one of our areas of focus for this financial year is infrastructure development. So we would like you to share with us your infrastructure development plan on this budget. Again, I know that in our engagement with FFC, they have commended the department for, I'm just not too sure whether it was the fourth quarter or the third quarter expenditure report, which was described to be at par with the treasury norm. So we would like to commend you on that one, which means there's no over or under expenditure. There's a break even. Okay, we commend you there. Is it the fourth quarter? Okay, I've just been corrected. It's the fourth quarter expenditure report. All right. Remember, that's where we look at whether there's violation of the PFMA or not. So as we use that instrument, here you're passing with excellence, you know. Okay. Now, coming to your audit opinion, the CFO has got to respond to this one. CFO, for the past 3 years, the department has obtained unqualified audit opinion with matters of emphasis. Now, what is stopping you from moving to the clean audit? Because that is the expectation. And if for 3 years in succession you have not made any movement, we would like to know if you are responding to the AG's request for your action plan to turn the situation around, those matters of emphasis, so that you can obtain a clean audit. Remember, I'm saying the expectation is that you should obtain a clean audit because you're there full-time, you're qualified, you've got the skill, and you've got to make sure that the department obtains a clean audit. All right. You see, in terms of flowing from the bill, the appropriation bill, 2017 appropriation bill. The emphasis in this bill is building a stronger and more inclusive growth, meaning that where we are, we require a stronger and more inclusive growth. And in order to obtain the stronger and more inclusive growth, the bill then says we need to move to a path of stronger and more inclusive growth by doing the following. Mobilizing private and public capital investment. Now, I'd like to know how is the department responding to this requirement. It also talks about investing in research and development and innovation. How is the department responding to this? Because there must be an alignment in terms of thinking and also in terms of budget allocation. And then okay. We at some stage we received a report that national departments owe municipalities their rates and taxes. Can you please share with us how much are you owing and what plan do you have to pay? Because indeed we've got to lead by example. These are service providers, and they've got to be paid within 30 days. The same principle applies. So if you could, the last one from me. Okay, I think it's in line with the private and public capital investment. No, that's fine. All right, I'll leave it. I wanted to say, do you have any public, it's your triple P arrangements, and then if you could share with us that information. Now, in your triple P arrangements, what we also expect is a memorandum of understanding, so that in the implementation of whatever program that you are partnering in, there's no deviation from also you do whatever, but within the parameters of the law. And also in your memorandum of understanding, where you are partnering with other departments, what we would like to see is it is a collaboration strategy, because it cannot just move on its own. You've got to meet and then agree on a collaboration strategy to avoid the duplication that we referred to earlier on. So the collaboration strategies, and then the so that we don't come in later and say we thought this one was doing this when this one was not doing this, because that thing will then inform your partnership and then also assist in terms of the implementation, avoiding duplications. I think these are the last, very, very last questions to yourself. Over to you. The acting DG, and then, okay.
Thank you, Chair. I think the first two questions Minister will deal with just now. In terms of the allocation for rural infrastructure development, for the MTSF, we will give you then the focus areas and the plans of that component. But as CFO was talking, the key things that we are doing within that component is the AgriParks program, driving infrastructure around the AgriParks program, dealing with also then the second one, the revitalization of rural towns and villages. So underneath that, we will deal with some of the things Minister referred to as the community facilities, etc. And under the revitalization of irrigation schemes in the country, as well as the animal and fowl management program. But we will then set that out for you, the plan for the entire period. CFO will talk to the other ones. In terms of how we are building a stronger and more inclusive growth through mobilizing private and public capital investment. I think, again, remember I mentioned one or two of the programs. I said, for example, we have the Strengthening of Relative Rights program, in which we partner with private sector, with farmers themselves, bringing in skills, expertise, but as well as capital into the commercial enterprises that we are working with. But beyond that, even within the rural development program, we partner with private sector. We have one particular initiative that we have been rolling out now for the past 3 years with regard to ICT in rural spaces as well as in rural schools, where we have partnered with a private sector, and we are able then, so far, we have touched more than 22,000 learners across the country in terms of access to ICT and technology within those schools. So we do have those models, and we do try to maximize then the programs of the department to catalyze additional investment into these spaces. And then the same would go with the public, additional public investment that we use then. One of the key tasks, Chair, that we have is to work with the municipalities in ensuring that we have rural development plans for each of the spaces that we are working in. So each of the districts have a rural development plan which we have assisted with. That is becoming a chapter within the IDP, and in it, it identifies key opportunities at local economic development opportunities, and that helps them as well to mobilize funding into the spaces of the municipalities. And so we assist in that regard through the unit of spatial planning within the department. In terms of investing in research, development, and innovation, most definitely we understand that in rural spaces we're going to have to be innovative if we want to bring services into those spaces. And we're also going to have to be innovative in terms of the development approach that we take. And so within the department, ever since the inception of rural development, having come to this department, we have a unit that is called Research, Technology and Development. It focuses working very closely with some of your SOEs, as well as the Department of Science and Technology. Like, we work with CSIR, we work with ARC, we put money into finding new and alternative ways of doing things better.
For example, one of the agri-parks that the president recently launched in Western Area, where we work with provincial government, has used new technology for vertical tunnels. And out of it, they've been able to increase the capacity and production that they have within those spaces. We also have been working with water and sanitation in terms of new research around water technologies, et cetera, around the country. So we have brought that element into our work, and we do fund that component so that we come up with innovation around that. Also, very recently, with Minister's guidance, we have elevated our unit that deals with policy research, so that we are able then to drive from the ground up the way in which we direct our policies and the elements that go into our policies being built around research that would have been done in those communities. And that, again, begins to talk to your earlier questions as well in terms of impact. CFO will also then touch, I think, on the triple P arrangements that we have, as well as the rates and taxes. Chair, we have made this a priority of the department to ensure that, indeed, we do take lead in paying the municipalities. In the last financial year, we paid just under 112 million rand in rates and taxes for the properties that the department owns. But CFO, I'm not sure if we have readily available the figure that we own currently. She will talk to that as well then. Thank you.
Thank you. On the rates and taxes, we currently owe 413 million, of which 348 million has been confirmed. We've got the list of those per province. We have not confirmed 58 million. You would have seen that the appropriation that we received for recent taxes is only 67 million from Treasury. We are in, I think yesterday I missed the meeting with Treasury and DPW where the deliberations were being made because I was here. We don't have that much money on rates and taxes. And part of that is that when the rates and taxes were given back to the departments, the budget kept being allocated to DPW, so they have not really given us the money in line with the number of properties that the department own. So we will not be able to pay all this money. We can only pay to the extent that we have the money. They only gave us 67 million for this year, yet we've got over 22,000 properties. On the triple P arrangement, we only have one triple P project that was only approved now in May by the National Treasury. We are busy with the contractual arrangements where we will enter into the contract with the preferred bidder. When that is done, we will again inform you of the final contract that we have. We have the bidder, we have the approval. We just are working on the contract currently. The matter of the unqualified audit, yes, it has been unqualified audit, but if you look at the management letter, you would see that there have been improvements over the years. Indeed, I think before any CFO bows from a department, they would want to get a clean audit, because it speaks for you. So I definitely intend to do that. This is my second year in the department. The matters of emphasis would not really go away, because if you look at them, they are just those issues that are important for users to make economic decisions. They are not necessarily saying we have been really wrong. You look at matters of emphasis on restitution commitments that are over a 5 billion that do affect the going concern if we were not backed by government and the Treasury. So the matters of emphasis that are there are really for economic a decision of the users. The issues that we have been battling with are issues around your contingent liabilities, which the state attorney does not normally come into the party when we do the confirmations
and when the AG does the confirmation, then they get the cases that we were not given, which normally are materially misstated. And then we then get an unqualified because of the material misstatements of the omissions that were made on the financials. We are trying to improve those, and we're hoping that this year things will go differently. Surely we do desire to get a clean audit, although it's not defined on the international auditing standards 700 series. There is no clean audit, but we will get it.
It is an expectation. Honourable Minister, I see, do you want to come in? I see Honourable Member McLaughlin wants to come in. Maybe the Minister can come after Honourable Member McLaughlin. Have we intrigued?
Member, there was just a clarity question on what the CFO was just saying. So I didn't hear you quite clearly. Is it 430 or 413, the arrear amounts for rates and taxes? You said 413 or 430? 413. And I just wanted to know, is that arrear rates and taxes or is that what's currently owed?
DPW had instituted an investigation or an audit of exactly how much does departments or the government owe to municipalities. And this was the outcome of that audit by the DPW. Yes.
Okay. Honourable Minister.
Thank you, Chair. Bushbuck Ridge. Bushbuck Ridge is a... That's where the agri hub is going to be. The good thing about it is that we are working on a dual program around all the 44 district municipalities where the agri park hub is going to be. So one of the things that we will do, because we have adopted this Turning South Africa into a Construction Site program. That's really a mega program for government. We're busy working now with through the technical people from TCTA, IDC, and TBSA. They're working out a program on this. But we already designed something for Moretele in the northwest because it's of its proximity to Pretoria for it was a pilot on this so that it should be easy for all departments to come on board. We want to see how it will work out. But therefore it means that the team that will go there will have to take note of this point. Fortunately they are here. They are at least the acting DG and the DG Southgate in particular. These are the people who are responsible for these designs and so on. They are in charge of that, CFO itself. So this point, I'm sure it will be covered through that mega program that government will probably adopt for the next financial year, because we are working on modalities right now. Yes. The otherwise, Bushbuck Ridge, in terms of the agri-park preparations, work is going well there. The participation of traditional leaders and in partnership with ourselves. Now, one of the things we are really happy about is with regards to the one household, one hectare. The traditional leaders have been the ones that have come forward to say, come and do this thing on our land. Last night we had three provinces here, Northwest, Eastern Cape, Limpopo. They came for this because traditional leaders say we want to Drain Pumalanga, Usipo Mashang, the deputy chairperson of the traditional house of the House of Traditional Leaders, also is the earlier, they want to participate in this. So when we said to, when we had a meeting with local mayors, we also had, they were there as well, because we want a collaboration between them, the two of them. I spent from 2 o'clock to 7 o'clock on Monday at the COPTA summit with them on this question of participation in the programs of the department. So we're working very closely in this matter. We think that those programs that are linked to local municipalities, the four of them here, those are the programs that will be working very closely with the traditional leaders and the local municipalities. So yes, we're working very, very closely together. Also, the communal land tenure bill, the part of why we're taking time to bring before we bring it to Parliament, it's out there for public comment. It's because of we want to make sure that we come up with something that has been thoroughly consulted with them as well. They are making a lot of inputs. One big question they're raising is one of the 13% from our homeland areas. They say these areas traditionally belong and historically belonged to them. But during the advent of democracy, remember that these lands were, that 13% was elevated to Pretoria. It's held in trust by the Minister of it was Agriculture and Land Affairs, now it's Rural Development and Land Reform. So they want this land to be devolved again to them for control. The big challenge which we were dealing with on Monday was the question of rather on Tuesday, is a question of the title deed, because there's an outer boundary title deed for the whole space, but then you have various title deeds, I mean institutionalized use rights. I hope the Honorable Kamashi, you might have heard this ILO 3 months ago. He was talking to the One Household, One Hectare when he said all households living in Ingonyama Trust land, they will get full title deeds on the basis of the One Household, One Hectare. And that was responding to our programs. Yeah. Lastly, I think I've dealt with that question. If there's something there, Honorable Tomashi, I'll come back to it if there is a need for that. Now, this thing, I think I like what the chair is saying. I hope my team would have taken note of the stress on a memorandum of understanding and the collaboration strategy, because that's one of the challenges. SALGA has advised us exactly the same way with AgriParks. When we say political championship, we have agreed that we, you know, with the AgriParks, it will be at the district level. SALGA has said exactly, say, look, for purposes of sustainability and ensuring that things happen according to plan, enter into a memorandum of understanding with each one of the district municipalities. That's where we are now, working on that one now. But we ask them to assist us. They haven't come on board for 2 months now. We're starting working on it ourselves. But thank you for that emphasis, Chair. I'm saying it because I would like to make sure my team also would pick up the emphasis from your side. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable members,
indeed, this was a robust engagement. But I would like to also hasten to say it was constructive, and I found it meaningful. And indeed, our report will come up with tangible recommendations to the House based on what we have discussed and agreed upon. We have now come to the end of our engagement. I just would like to find out from the Honourable Minister if the Honourable Minister has a closing statement.
Next time you have time, we would like to play you a video on AgriParks.
Okay.
So that you see the concept and the progress. Perhaps once a quarter, I would like
yes.
to.
Yes,
thank you.
We'll create that time. Thanks. So that would be your closing statement. Okay. All right, Honourable Members, indeed I would like to thank all of you for your full participation on this critical briefing from the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform as we are busy with the processing of the 2017 Appropriation Bill. I'd like to highlight some key issues emanating from our engagement. Firstly, from the members' intervention, it was clear that the department's presentation was well crafted, including the comprehensive responses. We would like to thank you for the adequate responses. The overall status of governance controls is positive and can only get better if we address all the identified gaps. So we really would want you to take this department to greater heights, but you'll be able to do so if you identify you plug into the identified gaps. The committee wants to see rapid revitalization of agriculture and agro-processing in our rural economies. And I'm sure you will agree with me. It is number one of your 9-point plans. So we would like to see this happening. It's a plan, but ours is to see the money, value for money in this. So the committee also supports the strengthening of programs on land claims commission, ensuring radical socio-economic transformation, creating jobs, improving further on the good work thus far on MPEPS indicators, attaining clean audits. We don't want to look at what they are doing internationally. We want to look at what the PFMA is saying, and then our interest is in the compliance there with the PFMA. And ensuring alignment and coordination in the sector. We note the issue of rates owed to other state agencies, and we will include this in our report and follow up on it. My strong suspicion, though it's not good to move from assumptions, is that this amount comes from accruals. The 400 previous years left. Yeah. So you'll see why the PFMA emphasizes paying within 30 days so that there's no accumulated accruals. When you speak about this, and I can see you want us to sympathize with you, but no, you've deviated from it. You should not have done it in the first place. Now it has accumulated, and it's even worse. You know, it's a deviation from the PFMA. So ours is to emphasize compliance, a balance between your performance and compliance. The committee requests reports on AgriParks program, detailed progress on outcomes, planning documents on your collaboration strategies and partnership model, MOUs, SLAs in place with sector partners, including the other spheres of government and the private sector. We're saying this because where we have found serious violation of the PFMA, it's where these are not available. And actually the internal auditors are supposed to assist us, and the monitoring and evaluation units are supposed to assist us in ensuring that this is put in place in compliance with the requirement. Honourable Minister and the department's officials, I really would like to thank you again for coming, honouring the invitation, but also for the informative presentation. Honourable members, let me thank you so much for attending. I think this, I have said, we're now rounding up, so this then rounds up a discussion between ourselves. But as for us in the committee, there are a few things that we, you know, internal matters that we'd like to discuss. But thank you so much. Okay, thanks. Thank you so much. Thank you. Honourable members, as they walk out, I want to check if you've got the outstanding minutes that we have to adopt from the previous meeting. Have we circulated? Yeah. We have 1, 2, 3, 16, 17, and 19 minutes of these dates that we have to adopt. Oh, Honourable Minister, thank you so much. Thank you, ma'am. Thank you. These sets are too many, and then in future let's try and be timeous, ne, with the adoption of our minutes, because we might be overtaken by events if we don't adopt them timeously. We've got a set of the 16, 17, 19, 23, and the 24th of May. All right, shall we then look at the minutes? And I am reliably informed that the minutes were circulated to all the members, which then leads to the assumption that members have read the minutes. So we will then start with a set of the 16th, looking at the correctness of the minutes. Page 1, page 2, page 3, page 4. Any proposal for adoption? Honourable Member McLaughlin, any seconder? It is not seconded. You are not in the meeting? Okay, thanks. So the minutes have been adopted as a true reflection of what transpired in the previous meeting. We'll move on to the next set of the minutes of the... You know what you did? You gave me the whole batch of the minutes of the term. Okay. We'll then move on to the minutes of the 17th. Any correction on page 1? The assumption is that members have read the minutes. Page 1, any correction on page 1? Page 2? Page 3? Page 4? Page 5? Any proposal for adoption? Honourable Member McLaughlin? Any seconder? Honourable Member Gwabaz. We then move on to the set of minutes of the 19th of May. Let's look at the correctness of the minutes on page 1, page 2, page 3. Any proposal for adoption? Okay, Honourable Member Gwabaza is proposing. Any seconder? Okay, Honourable Member McLaughlin seconds. And then, yes, the set of the 23rd. These were also circulated to members, and the assumption is that members have read the minutes. Shall we then look at the correctness of the minutes on page 1?
page 2, page 3. Any proposal for adoption? Honourable Member McLaughlin is proposing.
Sorry, Member, on page 3, if I may.
Is it correction?
Yes.
Of the
item 6.1.
Okay.
We need a word in there. It reads the last part of that sentence, in the 10 pilot districts and submit a report to the outcomes to the committee. Should be a report on or a report about, something along those lines. We're just missing
insurance
a word there.
Grant in the 10 pilot districts and submit a report
on the outcomes to the committee.
On, yeah, there's on there. Yeah, you're right. Makes sense. Okay, after these corrections, do you propose? Do you propose for adoption? Honourable Member Gobaza? Propose? Any seconder? Honourable Member, thanks. We move to this minutes of the 24th. Yes.
On the resolutions, I would like to propose that we request the content advisor and researchers to work on that brief to the HSRC, so that by the time we meet the state-owned enterprises, we've got this research back with us,
okay.
So that we can reach our
okay.
And all the other health insurance granting, all of them.
Okay. Now, we are now on the set of minutes of the 24th of May, and these minutes were also circulated. The assumptions that members have read the minutes, shall we then look at the correctness of the set of minutes of the 24th, starting from page 1, page 2, page 3, page 4, page 5, page 6. Any proposal for adoption? Honourable Member Gobaza proposes. And any seconder? Honourable Member Manana seconds. Thank you so much for this. I think it's under announcements. Are there any announcements? Announcements coming from the members? None. Honourable members, allow me to express my observations that I made during our engagement. Honourable members, we have called key stakeholders to come and analyse the 2017 appropriation bill for us, including your PBO, DPME, HSRC, FFC, and Public Service Commission. Now, what I have found missing in our engagement, I think we're not using this information in our engagement. So when we prepare for the meeting, can we look at what DPME has said, HRC, and then so that we also depart from those, because they were advising us on the different, on the appropriation bill. So let's look at these ones and then use this information in our engagement. It's just a reminder, because indeed we spent time, they came and they empowered us. Now it's up to us to use this information so that we can have, when we spoke to them, we said they've enriched us, so let's use this rich information to further enrich our engagement and also our recommendations. Thank you very much. And then correspondence, is there any correspondence? None. Honourable members, we now have come to the end of the meeting. Thank you once more for availing yourself for this meeting. And then if I may find out from the Secretariat, when is social development coming? Well, social development, I just want us to, so that we prepare ourselves mentally for this. From now on, we will have an engagement with social development on Tuesday. And then,
Wednesday we will meet to adopt the report, and then on Thursday we will debate the report in the House. We will table and debate the report in the House. Okay. To prepare for our Tuesday morning meeting, an application has been submitted for us to be excused from the session, so that we can finalize our work. Oh yeah, you're right. On Tuesday, we'll also be looking at the amendments that were proposed by Honorable Member Fick to this committee. And then I know that we said yesterday we could not proceed with that with the consideration of those amendments because the amendments have been referred to the legal advisor and to the PBO to advise, so that when we come here, we take an informed decision. So on Tuesday, and once we have this in writing, we'll circulate the reports from the legal advisor, the advice, and from to the members, so that when we come here, we just, or do you want the legal advisor, I know, was prepared to come and brief us. And then PBO, are you advising us in writing, or?
Good morning, and Chair, and good morning, members and colleagues. Yes, Chair, we can do either come to brief and or write.
No, maybe it's better you come and brief us.
Yes, we can do that.
Mr. Kovas, are we in agreement? They come and brief us in the meeting, and then the committee can then take a decision. Okay. Thank you so much. The meeting stands adjourned, and I wish you a good weekend.
Thanks.